This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Now, here's what we get to. We got games to get into, two last night. One of note, as far as the big picture goes, North Carolina and Syracuse will give you all those highlights. Virginia got back in their winning ways last night, knocking off Miami. But before we get to all that stuff and talk about the bubble, you know at 9 a.m. this morning, we will announce the all-important big-time awards when it comes to women's basketball in the ACC. Coach of the Year, Player of the Year, all-conference members, all-freshman team. We'll make those announcements this morning at 9 a.m. But before we get to all of this stuff, we got a gift yesterday. Yesterday afternoon, another arrival. You never know what comes to the house. And so here it is. This arrived yesterday at the house. All right, so I figured that while we work on West down there in beautiful Cartersville, Georgia, we will open up the latest package that arrived. And I just looked at where it was from. I opened up the top. I've not taken the gift out. So I figure we'll lead off the show today with this bad boy. Here it comes, beautifully wrapped as if it was a Christmas gift, and it really is. Today's gift is compliments of Georgia Tech. And as promised, because he was on the show last week, Josh Pastner, who has a little game to get into tonight against Duke, which we'll talk about, has now sent us a face shield. Here's the face shield. And I'm going to do it off the light so you can see it. Mark, here you go. The famous face shield signed by Josh Pastner. There it is. That's the original. Now, this is not the one that was destroyed at Clemson. He said he threw that bad boy away. So there it is. This will be highlighted in the studio. Right there. Face shield. Compliments of Georgia Tech. Tell you what now, the Jackets have brought the serious heat. Now, here's the face shield that got destroyed in Littlejohn. That one was to be tossed and never be seen again, even though he wore it in the second half. So when we have Josh on the show last week, I said, did he have one nearby? He just reached over and put it on and conducted the interview with us. So I said, we need to get one of those for the basement. So lo and behold, man of his word, Josh Pastner delivers the goods. There it is. Mark, here you go. The famous face shield, Josh Pastner. So we will highlight that. That will be put up with the Dave Doran pancake syrup and everything else that we got here in the basement. So we appreciate that from Coach. They've got a big one tonight against Duke. We'll get into that game. Obviously, a bunch, because it is a humongous game. Let's talk about what happened last night. The bigger game last night, no disrespect to Virginia snapping their losing streak against Miami, was Syracuse and North Carolina. And the Tar Heels have given you the yo-yo here in the last week, right? They gave you the flat effort against Marquette at home, didn't get the job done, tough loss, a bad loss, if you will, as far as the NCAA goes. Then the bounce back with a great win against Florida State, in which they outscored the Seminoles by 20 in the second half. Now, 48 hours later, quick turnaround, road trip, you go to Syracuse. Cuse fresh off of getting smacked around by Georgia Tech and Josh Pastner in Atlanta. 7-7 in the league, looking at the net, high 50s, going, man, we got to get a win somewhere. Kind of a must win last night for Syracuse. When you look at it, they had to win this game. They get Clemson on Wednesday, had North Carolina last night. Buddy Boeheim goes off. He goes over 1,000 points in his career. He scores 26. He was lighting it up from all over the joint. But this was a game of strange runs. I mean, strange runs. North Carolina got off to a great start. Went on a 9-0 run, led 11-2. Then Syracuse went on a run at 8-0. They cut it to 1 in the first half. They went on an 11-0 run late in the first half to take a 6-point lead at halftime. And then in the second half, nothing but runs. I mean, we had runs all over the place. You had North Carolina starting the second half on an 8-0 run to take the lead. Syracuse didn't respond and went on a 10-0 run. North Carolina bounces back on a 7-0 run to cut it to 5. Then you had this crazy 10-2 run at the end of the ball game. It was just nothing but wild, inconsistent, crazy. When you thought everybody had this game under control, here comes the next guy. And Syracuse had this thing cruising. They're up double digits. They're up 10 late. And North Carolina makes this run. And it literally came down to the last possession of the game. And Syracuse basically got to the finish line. But more importantly, you get the W if you're the Orange. You're now 8-7 in the league. You'll see what that does as far as the net goes. They know they've got to win out. The game against Clemson on Wednesday becomes paramount as well. But Buddy Boeheim hits 3 3-pointers, a great run down a late first half run to kind of get them back in the lead. And like I said, it was just give and take. For North Carolina, another one of those strange nights. Rebounding, totally dominated the boards as you expected them to do, especially against a smaller Syracuse team. Out-rebounded Syracuse by 20. They also committed 20 turnovers. And when you can't make shots from the perimeter, unlike Buddy Boeheim in Syracuse, you got a problem. 4 of 20 from beyond the arc. Now, again, big picture, must win for Syracuse. They got the job done in that department. And for North Carolina, hey, the good news is the Florida State win, in my opinion, gave them a little bit of cushion. But you don't want to have an 0-for week. North Carolina now has all week to get ready for Duke, which comes rolling into Chapel Hill. We'll talk about the Blue Devils a bunch later in the show as they get ready for a must-win for them tonight against Georgia Tech. But for Syracuse, there's still a glimmer of hope. You just had to win that game last night, and you did. So you take care of business, you get the W, you get ready for Clemson. But I still think Syracuse will not only have to win that game Wednesday, but they'll also have to go on a deep run in the ACC tournament as well. As far as Syracuse goes, it's only their second win in their last 12 meetings against North Carolina. The only other win, ironically, was about a year ago when we were just about ready to shut everything down. They blew North Carolina out in the ACC tournament. So it doesn't happen very often that the Orange knocks off the Tar Heels, but they get the win last night. They're 12-1 at home this season. They've won their last 7 games, so that's a good sign. I think even BPI got it right last night, which doesn't happen very often. They had Syracuse as a 55% chance to win the game, but it was tight down the stretch. But Syracuse found a way to win the game, which is the bottom line. As far as Jim Boeheim is concerned, after the game, he said after being critical of his team's defensive efforts the last time out, he was quick to heap praise on his team after the win.
Our defense was just so much better. 28 points the first half, just tremendous defense. But it was just a scrap. I mean, it was a real battle. And I can't tell you how proud I am of this team to hang in there and battle through this.
Find a way to win. That's all that matters. And it has to feel good for Coach, too, because his son, Buddy, lit it up, like I said. He scored 26 last night. He becomes the 64th Syracuse player to score 1,000 points in their team's history. And like I said, it was a game that Syracuse, quite frankly, had to win. If they had any chance, as far as the NCAA tournament goes, other than winning the ACC tournament, you got a sweep this week. And so Buddy Boeheim last night, I thought, was terrific. Wanted the ball. North Carolina really had no answers for him. And if you watch the ball game late second half, Buddy made the shot going through the lane, which he literally was falling down, threw it up at the rim, and it went in and got the three-point play. And you just kind of figured, hey, you know what? It's your night. There's the play right there. Look at that, play. And coaches over there giving it the old Tiger Woods fist pump. So for Jim Boeheim, great win for the team. They had to have it, and he had to feel great about his son. Now, Buddy's been on the show a number of times. Very engaging, funny, gregarious, and a really, really good player. He's really worked hard, developed his game. And, again, the ability to make threes was something North Carolina could not do last night, and Syracuse could. So, big picture, Syracuse still got a shot. North Carolina's on the good side of the bubble. Compliments of the big win against Florida State on Saturday night. But again, looming is Duke on Saturday. We'll get into that game more as the week goes on. Now, bubble watch. You know, we've talked a bunch about the Quad 1 and Quad 2. We're going to hear a bunch about Joe Lunardi coming up as far as bracketology. But the bubble watch is something that now goes into effect. I mean, we got to keep in mind, we're 12 days away from Selection Sunday. 12. I mean, it's March 2nd. It's go time. Last week of the regular season for the men. The women start their tournament beginning tomorrow in Greensboro. So you're going to see and hear a ton about the bubble watch. Now, there were some games last night of note. Rutgers getting smacked around by a lousy Nebraska team. Richmond lost at home to a terrible St. Joe's team. So those are issues as far as we talked about the bubble. Let's take a look at the bubble if we can. Because the last four teams from a bye perspective, Louisville. Again, big week for them. We got news about the Cards, which is not good regarding Malik Williams. But Louisville, UConn, VCU, Boise State. They've got the last four byes. It just goes to show you how important that Louisville-Duke game was on Saturday. The last four in, according to Joe Lunardi, Drake, Seton Hall, Xavier, and Georgia Tech. You don't think tonight's not big in the ATL, do you? First four out, Michigan State, Duke, Indiana, Utah State. And then on top of that, next four out, that's why Syracuse's win last night was so important. They still have a chance, especially if folks in front of them lose and Cuse can take care of business against Clemson. But I just want to point out one thing here. The first four out, can you imagine if the NCAA tournament was locked and loaded and the first four teams out were Michigan State, Duke, Indiana, and Utah State? Now, keep in mind, when this tournament gets cranked up on March the 18th, there's going to be four teams sitting in the wings and like they're in the bullpen just waiting to see if anybody has a COVID pause. And if so, we're not going to recede. We're going to go to the bullpen. First in, we go to the right hand. Let's go to the right hand. Let's bring them in. Can you imagine the likes of Duke and Michigan State, if they're the first four out, that they're kind of waiting for any time of COVID pause, that they come into the tournament, regardless of the team that gets, they could be a two seed. You replace them. I mean, this March Madness is going to be unlike anything we have ever seen. But if you don't think the game tonight with Duke and Georgia Tech isn't important, or Syracuse's game this week when they jump on Clemson tomorrow, or Louisville's schedule when they've got a dose of both Virginia and Virginia Tech left and they're sitting there in that precarious spot, there are humongous games coming up this week, which we will talk about in its entirety. Now, guest-wise today, Jay Heath will join us from Boston College. Of course, the Eagles coming off their giant win, their first one since January the 12th, and he knocked off Notre Dame at home. We're going to have Carlique Jones, who yesterday, Seth Greenberg on this show, believes he is the ACC Player of the Year. We'll have both those gentlemen on. And, of course, this morning at 9 a.m., all the women's basketball awards, we will announce those exclusively here on Packer and Durham. We'll also take your phone calls at 844-SAY-ACCN. Do appreciate Josh Pastner and the face mask and the face shield. That will be displayed prominently here in the studio. Appreciate that a great deal. We'll come back. Maybe, just maybe, we get Wes Durham. We got to get that figured out because Wes has a game tonight with Wake Forest and Pittsburgh. We'll discuss Duke and Georgia Tech and all that other stuff. We got a busy, busy show. I'm Mark Packer. My partner eventually will join me, Wes Durham. You got us right here. It's Packer and Durham on ACC Network. Coming right back to you. Tons to talk about. We come down the stretch drive, and it's March in the ACC.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and eventually Durham here on ACC Network. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. Again, I got the face shield now prominently displayed back there. And we do appreciate Georgia Tech hooking us up with that bad boy. Big game tonight. Georgia Tech and Duke, cannot emphasize the impact that game's going to have, not only within the league, this double bye thing. Again, we talked about the race for the double bye, which is going to be out of sight. But that game's just got implications like nobody's business. All right, I'm going to try to bring back my partner to make his debut on show number 332. We head down to Cartersville, Georgia. I can hear him laughing in the background. Mr. Durham, good morning. How are you?
Better late than never, as you can tell. Still kind of getting all the wires put in here this morning. So getting all that done. How you doing? Everything good? You get everything going this morning? Thanks for picking up the front end of the show, as they say.
No problem whatsoever.
So Josh, I got that going on.
Josh Pastner hooked us up with the face shield, which is up over my shoulder. And that's signed, sealed, and delivered. He promised that he'd send us a signed one, and we're going to display that bad boy here during the rest of the hoop season. They've got a big game tonight. But your take on Syracuse and North Carolina – first, before we get into what Virginia did, snapping their losing streak. It was a game Syracuse had to win. Buddy Boeheim was great. A weird game of streaks, but a really, really important win for Syracuse.
Well, let me ask you this. We started the day kind of with about eight teams. You know, the three at the top, Florida State, Virginia, Virginia Tech, right? And then you've got that cluster of Louisville, Clemson, Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Duke. So does Syracuse win? And I thought about this after the ball game last night while I was cobbling some notes together. Does Syracuse's win, if you take just that win now over North Carolina, it's not like it's a win over Florida State or a win over Virginia or Virginia Tech, although they have that, the Virginia Tech win. Do they have enough elsewise to get your interest if you're sitting on that committee right now?
No. No.
Okay. All right. No, but
I mean, they're in the neighborhood. They're in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if the tournament started today, are they in? No, they are not. No, they're not.
Okay. But now, Wednesday night, tomorrow night's game with Clemson, huge. Absolutely enormous. Right. Sure. Clemson's going to know that too. Tigers are also chasing the double bye, as you pointed out earlier. I think the scenario with Carolina gets a little more interesting for Saturday night against Duke, based on what happens tonight in Atlanta in particular. By the way, the Blue Devils have not lost to Georgia Tech since Derek Favors put a jersey on in 2010. Sidebar to that. So when you think about how the Duke-Carolina game sets up, I go back to the wisdom of Mark Packer. Not that it's going to be, it could very well continue to be a race for the NCAA tournament. But your question about Syracuse last night, they played the full game like they played the first half in Chapel Hill the first time the two teams saw each other, in my mind, Mark. They hit threes. Carolina out-rebounded them. The number at the end is huge. But it doesn't matter when the team with all the rebounds can't hit shots. And Carolina last night couldn't hit shots. There were no perimeter shots to be had last night. I mean, even a couple of goaltends were the beneficiary of a three. But I still think that that game last night's about what Syracuse can be when Syracuse plays well. And they are principally based on hitting shots. It's not guarding. It's not stopping anybody. It's not doing anything else other than the simple fact that if they hit shots, they're going to win some games because they've got a talented core of shooters on that floor.
I will just say this real quickly, and then we'll move on to Virginia. It was the walking wounded at the end of the game for Syracuse. I mean, there were guys limping.
That's a concern.
And I watched that game, and hey, you got to get to the finish line, which they did, winning by two. Now they got another quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. They're going to play Saturday, Monday, Wednesday. That's an NBA-like schedule.
Yep.
And they're going to go Georgia Tech, North Carolina, Clemson. It's one thing to play 3 in 5 days. You go, okay, great, whatever. They're playing three good clubs in 5 days, and they have to win tomorrow. That's a must win for Syracuse. If they don't win tomorrow, their only means to get in the tournament is to win the ACC tournament. It's really that simple. And for North Carolina losing didn't help Duke last night, because what Duke needed was North Carolina to win at all cost to make that game even bigger on Saturday. So that North Carolina losing last night did not actually help Duke. I know Duke fans may not get that, but you will, assuming based on the outcome tonight, because that game Saturday has to be as big as possible for Duke. I still think North Carolina's on the good side. Duke's got work to do, but we'll see where it goes. But despite all that, Mr. Durham, there was another game of note, and that was Virginia. Yeah. And that was my surprise in Notepad, the surprise of the month of February. Was the Hoosiers lost three straight? I didn't see that coming under any circumstance, given the way they've dominated ACC regular season play here the last couple of years. And you know what? This wasn't easy. You know, again, we talked about streaks with the North Carolina Syracuse game. There was a streak at the end of the first half of this game in which Virginia went on a crazy run to just kind of went 12-zip run and just kind of get into a comfort zone at halftime. Miami made a run to cut it to 6 a couple times in the second half, but they just don't have enough bodies. Guys playing too many minutes. Kihei Clark and Jay Huff did not start the second half. And Tony Bennett, I think, sending a message of, hey, you got to be ready to play. I mean, it's March. You know, I know it's a grind. It's been tough, but you got to be ready to go. So I think Coach Bennett kind of sending a message to two of his key components. But Virginia still had too much for Miami. And, again, no surprise there that the Hoos won, snapping their losing streak. But they've got important games left, too, including that game with Louisville later this week. It's going to be a big, big game for both of them.
I thought Dallin Cuff and Jordan Cornette made an interesting point last night in the coverage on ACC Network about how quick Bennett was to get into the bench last night. You saw Cafaro. You saw Justin McCoy, really, really early in the ball game last night. So I don't know if that's tinkering or if that's just, hey, guys, let's don't go down that path of – of wrong again. But Virginia rebounded. Isaiah Wong, another good night for Miami. But the idea of Virginia took care of Virginia last night, Pack, in a lot of ways, I thought.
Well, they just had to get back to their winning ways. I mentioned Virginia and Louisville at the end of the week, a humongous. Yep. Louisville's got a big week in front of them. That's why that win at Duke was so important, because you've got Virginia Tech and Virginia still left on their calendar, and they're going to have to do it without Malik Williams, which was breaking news yesterday and awful news. I mean, we've been waiting on Malik Williams to get back in the fold for Louisville. He plays against Duke, re-injures the foot, and he is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, which basically means he's out for the rest of the season. That is a big, big loss for Louisville. Because the one thing we've been talking about in all of February was, when this team gets whole, I thought they could be a danger team because their backcourt is so good, right? Johnson, Jones, and company. But, man, Williams was a difference maker in the middle, and now he's back out again. I know Louisville's used not to playing games without him, but I just don't know if Louisville can get to where they want to be without Malik Williams in the lineup.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's a crushing blow for Louisville, although it comes on the same heels of Jalen Withers, fine performance and being one of the ACC rookies of the week. I mean, the idea of, no Malik Williams down the stretch here really changes the dynamic and certainly is going to put more pressure on Carlik Jones, who I know you said earlier joins us at 8:30 this morning. But this is a Louisville team now that Chris Max had that's kind of been plugged in and unplugged and, rebuilt once, now rebuilt again. And, it's really going to be about the locker room now, how those guys come together and whose role gets expanded or whose role goes back to being what they thought it was going to be before Malik Williams, but has a different approach to it. And coaching will matter here, and they got a good one. So that's going to be interesting to watch Louisville unfold this week. And they got a challenging finish just like Carolina, Duke, and some of these other schools.
Wes, I'll say this, though. It would be different. Let me try to find the silver lining here for Louisville. Here's the good news. It would have been different had you been playing with Malik Williams all year, and now you lose him, and you go, okay, how are we going to respond without our big inside? Louisville's been playing all year without him for the most part. So the adjustment of kind of going back to the way we've been playing, it won't be one of those shocks to the system, even though their schedule is really daunting here the last two in the regular season before we get to postseason play. So I think from that perspective, it helps that they'll be used to not seeing Malik in the middle, if that makes any sense whatsoever. You want him. I'm not telling you you're better off without him because you're not. But at least there's a comfort zone that, hey, we've won games before without Malik Williams in the lineup. So let's just go do what we do. But with that backcourt, you got a chance in March. But, man, it just does change the dynamic. Because I thought Louisville, with a healthy Malik Williams, playing more minutes, starting to get conditioning and back to being a basketball player, I thought Louisville could be really, really dangerous in March. They'll still be good, but they've got work to do. They can't go LL into the ACC tournament.
Pack, he only gets essentially, what, two games of this season, right?
Crazy.
I mean, yeah, it is. And in some respect, you can have the conversation with Malik Williams, and we can do it here. This is pure speculation on our part. We're starting to hear, a little bit of rumbling about the bonus year, that super senior was the term, what Lonnie Almeida used with us from Florida State.
Yeah.
You get the year back. Is Malik Williams a candidate for the super senior? I mean, is he a candidate for that extra year on the house type deal? I mean, I think it's one of the things that you have to think about for Chris Mack based on where your program is. What's that conversation like? Going to be interesting. I mean, there are going to be a lot of roster management issues. Now, remember, it was important that you think about the 13 scholarships and the non-counters if those extra years come back. How does that work at Louisville? How does that work at other schools? But that's the first thing I thought of yesterday, actually after the injury, was, is Williams, with just two games in, is he a counter to, a guy potentially coming back for the Cards?
Bummer. I was really looking forward to seeing Louisville make some noise. And again, they still could. I'm not just putting dirt on the grave here. But I think I am now speaking for Louisville fans. That I think the anticipation of Malik at 100% and those guards and having some momentum, especially with the way this season can end the regular season with Virginia Tech still left on the schedule. I thought Louisville was in a position to be one of those danger teams in the tournament that might have a number beside their name that's a little too high that can make some noise. Again, you got to have great guard play to make a run in March. Louisville definitely has that. But, man, it would have been much, so much better with Malik Williams healthy and good to go. But, unfortunately, we're not going to see that in March.
Yeah, right about that. By the way, a couple notes about the polls here before we get to the bottom of the hour. Florida State is at 11 despite their loss to Carolina at the end of last week. Virginia and Virginia Tech both fell, as you might expect. 21 and 22, respectively, for the Cavaliers and the Hokies yesterday afternoon. Sidebar to the NCAA bubble talk in Indianapolis, the NCAA, which also controls the NIT, of course, has set the NIT field up for half the field, which is 16, and they're not going to bubble it, but they're going to play it in a centralized location pack in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, very similar to what you're seeing in San Antonio for the women and also with the men. They are going to use the Dallas-Fort Worth area to conduct the National Invitation Tournament. First time in its 83-year history, it will not be in New York City.
I think they should play it at Kim Mulkey's house. She kept talking about how this is a money grab. If that doesn't define money grab, nothing does. We really need to have the NIT tournament. So I think we should have it at Kim Mulkey's backyard driveway, the NIT. Just play them, bring everybody in, social distance, just play them all one after another. Yeah. Start at 7 a.m., when we find a winner, great. Congrats, you're number 69. Have a banner. Have a celebration.
Sure.
Let's go. And what a joke. I mean, if that's what you want to do, go for it. I don't care. Don't care about the NIT.
All right, sit tight. We had a chance to visit with Boston College guard Jay Heath out of Washington, D.C. yesterday after the program on the Eagles' win over the weekend against Notre Dame. And they go big game hunting in Tallahassee. We will talk to Jay Heath of the Eagles. Lots going on at Chestnut Hill. How they handled it. We'll do that next on Packer and Durham. Good morning.
Packer and Durham. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Big, big, big announcement coming up 9 a.m. today. ACC Women's Awards exclusively on Packer and Durham. Giant game tonight, men's side, Georgia Tech and Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Huge ramifications in terms of the big picture. But, Mr. Durham, yesterday after our program, while we were not streaming live on the ESPN app at the time, we had a chance to talk with Boston College's Jay Heath. And, of course, it was just I felt good for BC, yep. right? I mean, no disrespect to Notre Dame. But just to see BC get back in the winning column after January 12th, that's a long way to go with COVID issues, coaching changes. It's been a tough year, but BC got the big win over the weekend. But it was good to have Jay Heath on the show.
Sure was. And we told him, said, hey, Saturday just had to feel good against Notre Dame.
We haven't won in I don't know how long. We just came out with a lot of energy, though. We was in quarantine for a little while, so you could see, like, when we came out, we had a lot of energy. It was a lot of joy to play. We was very excited. And I just feel like we won the game. Like, as soon as we jumped ball, I just feel like I just knew we was going to win. Our energy from the bench, the coaches, the players on the floor, it was just Notre Dame couldn't match it. And I feel like that's what we won the game at.
Jay, I don't need to relive, first of all, COVID. You lose your coach. It's been a long year. But you know what? All the hard work that all of you guys have put into it, it had to feel good, right? Last home game, you just got to figure at some point in time the ball's going to drop and we're going to win and we're going to play some defense, get after people. And I know you gave up 90, but, man, it just had to feel good to win, to justify all that hard work.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot going on with the coach. People's leaving. But, you know, we just came together. We came together as a unit. We finally got one. We didn't defend as good as, like you said, but the ball did drop for us. We made free throws at the end, and it felt good to win.
Jay, what was it about, and look, I know Scott Spinelli had been there with Coach Christian. You obviously, you have a relationship with him as much as you do the other assistants or even Coach Christian when he was in charge. So, with Spen taking over, did that change the environment for you guys at all in a short period?
Spen, as everybody knows, Spen got a lot of energy. But, you know, we had the same core values as when Coach Christian left. But Spen brings a lot of energy, and I just feel like that carried over to the team very well. And it showed last night.
Jay, what's been the hardest part of this season for you, individually?
Individually, I would just say trying to help my team win. We came to the season like with high expectations. We feel like we were supposed to do better than what we're doing. And right now, we're just not doing it. So I would say that's the toughest thing for me.
You look at the way this season could finish, Jay. How much of it is a springboard for the new coach, the next administration, whatever happens next year? Do you think about that going down the stretch here?
I feel like it is on our mind, but we just try to stay focused. I feel like if we try to make a run here in the ACC tournament, hopefully go to the NCAA tournament, they should rehire Spen for the coach. But, I mean, right now we just focus on right now trying to win games and make a run at the ACC tournament.
Jay, given how crazy the year is, you got COVID going on, you guys get to first win since January 12th, how do you celebrate?
We celebrated last night, but I mean, it was only one win, so we got to get back to work today, get ready for Florida State.
Yeah, but you know what, that sounds good though, Jay, but it just had to be a sense of relief of, oh, thank goodness, we finally got a W. And yeah, I know the social distance, you got to be smart on all that stuff, but there had to be at least a sense of it, guys. It just wasn't just another game. This was a win for us, man. We got the W.
Yeah, when we got in the locker room, you know, we was dancing. We was very excited. Some people was just looking around. We didn't even know how to react. We haven't won in so long. But, I mean, it was a great feeling. We just trying to get that feeling again on Wednesday night.
Jay, I want to ask you about the guys like Sam and Will starting on Saturday. And then, you know, Sam hits a three to start the ball game. What was that like? What's that like for guys that are walk-ons who, you know, they don't play much, let's be honest. Those guys get some run here and there. But for them to get an opportunity to start and then for Sam to hit that three, what was that like?
It was big. You know, it was senior night, so he wanted to have their last game. And, well, when Sam hit the three, actually, I feel like that brought all the energy. You could tell from the bench, from our reactions on the court, like, after you hit that three, it was like, no way we losing this game. And, you know, they put a lot of work in for us in practice. They make us work on the scout team. And, you know, we just wanted to end their college career well.
Jay, a couple weeks ago, when you guys were battling through the pause, and it looked like, okay, we're getting ready to put this thing back together again, but yet you only had, like, four scholarship players. You had the scout team sitting there. What were the conversations like? Like, man, we're going to have practice today, but there's only four of us. I just can't even imagine, as crazy as life is with COVID, and again, with all the protocols you got to go through, that you're going to try to put this thing together in the middle of February when you're so used to just having a normal college life and playing games and having a good time, that how in the world are we going to even have a practice, much less play a game?
I mean, it was tough. We all knew we was going to get a lot of reps in practice. So if anything, we was going to get in shape. But, I mean, you know, I feel like the walk-ons, they would have stepped up for us. But it was tough, actually.
Well, I want to ask you about the seniors, the guys who else you honored on Saturday. Steph Mitchell's played a lot of basketball at Boston College, Jay. I know he impacts the program in a lot of different ways. What is the one characteristic that a kid like Mitchell has given you for the remainder of your college career?
Stephon is a hard worker. He really thinks the game of basketball. Like, that's why I feel like he's so great on defense, because he uses his mind more than like his natural ability and his talent. But one thing that will leave with me with Steph is hard working and just always working. He's a hard worker. He stayed here over the summer, didn't go home. Worked on his shot. As you can see, he's making more shots now. And he's just a hard worker all around.
Jay, a question I ask every student athlete that appears on our show is this one. And that is, during your time at Boston College, what has been your hardest class?
My hardest class, right now, I would say, is probably globalization. It's not really that hard. It's a lot of work. She gave a lot of work, so just got to stay on your feet. Make sure you check Canvas. Make sure you don't miss no assignments. It's a lot of work with globalization.
Well, I know this much. Given the fact that you guys are in, going nowhere fast as far as a COVID perspective, all you got is time in basketball, my man.
Yeah,
so you know she's going to put the work on you. Well, we wish you the best on that. Listen,
Jay,
nothing's easy today, man.
Yeah, we sure do.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I feel good for Jay Heath and that team because, you know, listen, everybody puts in unbelievable work. Not everybody has a chance to cut down nets and win championships and have winning seasons. And given what that club specifically has been through this year, Wes, between COVID pause, not winning a whole lot of games, you lose your head coach, times that you only had a couple guys that could go practice. You got the scout team, the Martians, and I mean, it's just been one of those kind of years for BC, but you can tell Jay's a quality dude, and good for him and good for BC getting the W. And at least there's, you know, kind of a silver lining there. At least we got the win, got a taste of it for senior night and all that good stuff. But, I mean, what a crazy year in Chestnut Hill.
Yeah, it has been. And the thing you look at is, you know, just how BC moves forward here. We mentioned Mitchell. He's a big piece of what they've been the last three, 4 years, really. New head coach, new administration. Pat Kraft takes over as the AD less than a year ago, Pac. You know, but you feel for those guys. They get a win or two down the stretch. It's a hard year anyway, but maybe you feel just a touch better about it for sure.
Yeah, well, I got news for you. Enjoy the party because the road trip next is Tallahassee. The Noles have won 24 straight ACC games. And, oh, by the way, coming off a loss. So enjoy the good times when you get them.
Yeah.
But they'll have their hands full against Florida State. The Noles will not be in a good mood, even though Leonard got that new five-year contract extension and well-deserved. But that will be a tough task for the Eagles coming up next.
Well, Mark told you earlier, we got a headliner tonight in Atlanta with Reese Davis and John Crispin. And we got another one as well with Wake Forest visiting Pittsburgh. Two teams trying to sort it out going down the line here. But the big one is the Jackets and the Blue Devils. Duke's longest current win streak over any ACC opponent is the 14 in a row they've won against Georgia Tech. We'll talk about the game next.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Interesting games last night. Syracuse, a much-needed W against North Carolina. Wes, you've got Wake and Pitt tonight, both of them desperate for a win. It's been a while for both of them. And then you've got Duke and Georgia Tech in Atlanta. It's been over a decade since the last time Georgia Tech has beaten Duke. Jackets have been good at home. Duke coming off a really tough, emotional loss to Louisville on Saturday night, and they know what's at stake. This, as far as bubble games go, you can't get more bubblicious than where Georgia Tech and Duke are and what it means tonight in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think I think what you're talking about is matchups. You're also talking about teams playing for the next time. The NCAA is the tournament itself is almost like, you know, an automatic for the Blue Devils. Georgia Tech hasn't been there since, well, the last time they beat Duke, Pac, right? 2010. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how this game unfolds because there's some matchups here on the floor. I mean, you can talk about Alvarado and DeVoe with Stewart and Roach on the perimeter. Wendell Moore, who does he draw tonight in the defensive set for Coach K? Who guards Moses Wright tonight, Pac? That's one thing that, at least in my bug, is going to be interesting to see. How's the defensive assignment on Moses Wright work? And how does Moses Wright handle that tonight? He's played with a tremendous amount of confidence, but this is Duke now. This is a team that, you know, you grew up in Raleigh, you know all about the Blue Devils. And how does Moses Wright handle this moment against Matthew Hurt? I mean, last night there was some conversation about Moses Wright potentially being a guy that might be not only first team all ACC, but potential player of the year, Pac.
I'm not going to go that far with Moses, even though he's been out of sight. Certainly the most improved player in the league, in my opinion. Here's what I love about this game. You know, the first time these two played at Cameron, it was literally anybody's game. Anybody's game with a buck and a half to go, right? We had 90 seconds, basically a tie game. And to Duke's credit, they manned up in really an effort that they had to have even then. Now, you remember, Duke beat Georgia Tech and then took Clemson to the woodshed that week. And we all, everybody in the media, everybody that follows college basketball was like, man, Duke is back. You know, that we finally saw Duke. And 48 hours later, they lay an egg at Miami and lose. You had the whole Jalen Johnson issue, and the rest is history. And you're like, oh, stick a fork in Duke, they're done. All of a sudden, Johnson's gone, and Duke's freshmen step up and really start playing well. Duke all of a sudden started to play defense. Remember? We got in the whole thing. You can't give up over 90 to North Carolina and Notre Dame. That's not Duke. All of a sudden, the Devils got it. Coach was on here the other day talking about, yeah, we got into defensive positions in practice and really started working on it. And, again, there's no shame in losing Louisville like they did Saturday. It was a tough game. Could have gone either way. But I think the thing that's so cool about this game is you know what's at stake for both sides. And I truly believe both teams are very different than when they first played at Cameron. They're both much better than the first go. And the first game was really competitive. Like I said, that game could have gone either way. And now there's no Jalen Johnson, but I think Duke is playing better basketball now without him. Georgia Tech got a little bit more experience. Alvarado's been great. Moses Wright has exploded in the month of February. This game's got juice. It's got storylines. It's got good players. It's got swagger. Georgia Tech's got the chip on the shoulder. Haven't beaten these dudes in over a decade. Duke knows what's at stake, not only tonight in Atlanta. They also know what awaits them in Chapel Hill. Two games they must win if they're going to get into the dance. You know what Joe Lenardi thinks in terms of last four in, last four out. You can find Georgia Tech and Duke on either side of the line. I mean, what more do you want in terms of March basketball that's not the tournament yet that really means something? And that is exactly what this game is tonight with Georgia Tech and Duke.
You've got the three top scorers in the ACC in the month of February on the floor tonight. Matthew Hurt, Moses Wright, Michael DeVoe, right? Heard you mentioned coming off the 37. Nobody in Duke jerseys had that many since Redick scored 40 against Virginia in his career. Hurts averaged 24 in his last five. The idea that he is not only first-team All-ACC, but here's another guy who's on the Player of the Year list. I think you're talking about two stars in Wright and certainly Hurt. Then you mix in the Alvarado quotient. Wendell Moore always has a flair for the dramatic in games like this, Pac. I mean, go back to what he did in Chapel Hill last year. Think about when Duke was kind of sliding a little bit earlier this year. Moore came up with a big game. This is, in my opinion, the best game of the week in the ACC. It is. I mean, when you think about it, all the things that are coming together here, we'll see what Caroline Duke is Saturday night. But Georgia Tech Duke tonight becomes a game that determines fates. I mean, let me ask you this. If Georgia Tech wins tonight, they're in. They play Friday night in Winston-Salem against Wake Forest, but they're in the tournament. Then regardless of what happens in Greensboro. Then you look at Duke, Mark. If Duke wins tonight, that sets the stage for another monster Saturday night, doesn't it? Chapel Hill.
Which becomes the biggest game of the week. That's why I don't know if I'm going to go there. I don't know if I'm going to go there tonight and put it tonight. It is the most critical game in college basketball because not just from an ACC perspective, it's going to affect other teams. This is one of those bubble games that somebody could hopscotch, be on the good side, flip back to the bad side. It could be like Georgia Tech.
Yep.
For Georgia Tech and Duke tonight, to me, this game kind of feels like North Carolina beating Florida State, put North Carolina where they could take a deep sigh of relief and go, okay, we still got work to do, but man, I feel like we got some working margin here. A Georgia Tech win tonight puts them in that category to me. They went, all right, we got some working margin. Duke knows that that loss to Louisville Saturday, and that's why that was such a humongous game for both of them. Because I think if Duke would have won that game, You could have had Duke and Louisville flipping spots on Lenardi's crazy bubble watch list. So, again, they're all important down the stretch. But this game tonight, like I said, it's got juice because this has a bearing on both teams, their future, and the teams around them as far as who makes a move up and down based on a win or a loss. And given the fact that Duke has owned Georgia Tech, and they have for the past decade, adds a little bit more intrigue. And, you know, we talk about all the scores between Goldwire and Alvarado. You got two of the best ball hawks in the league as far as steals and creating some defensive issues at the point. So that is a game within the game, too. Mm-hmm. So it's a tremendous matchup. The first game was fun to watch. This one should be even better.
Yeah, I think the steals thing is interesting. Alvarado averaging 3.07 a game. Goldwire, 2.38. They're 1-2 in steals. Carly Jones is in the top three. He'll join us, of course. But those are the only two guys with more than two per game. So you almost sense, and then we were talking about these matchups a moment ago, right? You almost sense that Goldwire maybe not only plays early, potentially he's Alvarado's best friend tonight, right?
Yep.
When you think about it. Then I go back to Moses Wright, Pack. How do you handle Moses Wright? Is it a Mark Williams thing? Is it a Wendell Moore deal? Is it Henry Coleman? Do you put Matthew Hurt, who doesn't have great defensive prowess? Do you challenge him to say, okay, tonight your job is to stop number five?
Last week when Georgia Tech went to Virginia Tech and the boys in Blacksburg come off the pause, and I watched the game and I saw afterwards Moses Wright was asked, he had a great game against Aluma, and said, you know what? I wanted to prove I was the best player on the court. Hey, he said that. And I thought that was interesting because, again, after the win, you're allowed to say whatever you want. You won the game, and he played great. I sense that same conversation is going on today, that Moses Wright wants to go out on the floor and go, guess what? Matthew Hurt's a really good player, having a great year. But I'm going to be the best player on the court.
Yep.
And that's why I am intrigued to watch the competition level because, you know, Coach K's been in a trillion of these kind of games and knows what's at stake. Josh Pastor knows, hey, this is the moment. We've got experience. We got the edge in experience. We're an older team. We got multiple weapons. We've been great at home. We haven't beaten these guys. And we know that if we win this game, just like I said, there's going to be like a deep sigh of relief that, okay, good. We're in a good spot. So, like I said, this is a Mike Young grab your popcorn game because this has everything you want to be entertained as a basketball fan.
Well, and the Blue Devils tonight play in a road environment because Georgia Tech has allowed fans into McCamish Pavilion during the course of the year. So tonight, they'll get a student body. They'll get a band toward the upper deck, I think. They'll get crowd. It'll be a road environment tonight for the Blue Devils as well. That, I'm sure, is a talking point for Coach K and his team as they get ready. 8 o'clock on ESPN2 tonight. Reese Davis and John Crispin will have the call for you. Stay tuned. Hour 2 of Packer and Durham's Tuesday coming up. The value of the double bye. Look at a little tournament logistics here when we come back and start the hour. Also, Carly Jones at 8:30 on the Tuesday edition of Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.